first of all, thank you very much, Dominique, Yasser, Marie, Marie-Laurence, of course, for your invitation to come here today. It's a pleasure. What I'm going to be talking about is some exploratory work I've conducted with a graduate student of the University of Liège, Olivier Liezen, since we've been doing this for 2 years. It's actually exploratory work that has triggered my interest on issues of social protection, transnational social protection, as we some of us conceptualize it. And triggered it so much my interest that I've decided to submit an ERC proposal, which got accepted recently, so I'm going to be working more on these issues in the future. So stay with me, because this is quite exploratory, and what I'm going to try to do today is probably, give a few hints from that early work I've done and see how it helps reconceptualize or clarify certain ideas about how we deal with remittances and the interaction in particular between social and financial remittances. So I'm going to be focusing on the specific forms of organizing care across border, organizing family solidarity and across border through a specific mechanism that's called transnational health insurances. And we look in particular at the case of a Belgian Congolese health scheme that allows Congolese migrants in Belgium to provide health care insurance to their relatives in Kinshasa. I want to maybe start by reminding that obviously the topic of health and migration and how immigrants can help their relatives access to healthcare is not new per se. Well, health has been traditionally, or historically I should say, looked at as a potential driver for migration, but also health has been a research object that we've looked at as to see how migration affects the health of the people who move, but also more recently I would say issues of access to healthcare and the increasing controversies around what is a legitimate use of healthcare by immigrants has also gained a lot of traction. I should say that in trying to conceptualize how access to healthcare can be transformed across borders, we have experienced quite an acceleration in terms of research thanks to two broad fields of literature. One is the one on transnational migration, and the other one is the migration and development literature. And both these bodies of literature have really explored the interconnectedness of health here and there, as I put it. How did they do that? Well, as we probably all know here, migration and development literature has looked a lot at the impact of remittances on access to health of relatives in sending societies, but it has also looked at issues of brain drain or brain circulation in the specific sector of health and how migration can lead to the absence of doctors or health professionals in certain regions, and more recently even with the development, the increasing work on co-development, scholars have also looked at how receiving societies can involve migrants in their development aid policies, specifically in the area of health. That's for the migration and development literature. With regards to the transnationalism literature, a lot has been done on the reorganization of care across border, primarily with the circulation of especially female migrants who come and supplement the deficiencies of European welfare states, especially in Southern Europe. But also a lot has been done on the impact of remittances on behaviors and health behaviors in sending societies. And here it's mainly with the concept of social remittances and how migrants can trigger better or worse health practices in the sending society through the circulation of ideas, practices, behaviors that are not per se financial. So there is a growing literature on my immigrants' impact on relatives' health in the home country, and looking very broadly at this literature, we can so far identify four strategies by which immigrants traditionally try to respond to healthcare needs of their relatives in the home country. The first one is mobility, and that's obviously probably the most obvious one is basically trying to respond to healthcare needs of your relatives by trying to bring them over. As we all know, obtaining visas is a difficult issue, especially these days in the European Union. But even in the specific case of health concerns, it is not easy. Some of you might know that there are specific visas to get surgery or to get specific health interventions. But in one of the cases I've been working on Belgium, to be very, very clear, over the past year, even with the current situation in Syria, only two families have managed to get visas for health reasons. So only two families with people who are injured have been managed to get visas to come and get health care in Belgium. So mobility, whereas it seems to be an obvious strategy, an obvious avenue to allow your relative to access to quality health care if it's not available in the homeland, well, it's actually only a theoretical one for most third country nationals. Then the second one, which is the most widely used strategy, is obviously remittances, and it is the sending of money to purchase directly health care with practitioners in the sending society. It can be, as I just said, a direct purchase, so it's a payment out of pocket of a medical practice, or it can be the purchase of a health insurance. And so therefore, with your remittances, you encourage your relatives to participate into a health scheme. This situation, obviously, in the case of the out-of-pocket payment of health care, is somewhat problematic in the sense that it does not lead to the consolidation of a sustainable health system in the sending society. It actually contributes to increase the inequalities between families who have relatives abroad and families who don't, the former being the only one to access health thanks to remittances. Somewhat to attenuate that, we have the collective remittances, which are those group projects that migrants develop to build better health infrastructure, for example, in the sending society. A lot of examples have been documented in Mexico, but also in Morocco, about how immigrants from certain hometowns do get together and collect money to build a hospital, finance the purchase of drugs, etc., etc. So that's the most widely used solution by immigrants. Another one is much less frequent, but probably offers a better coverage to immigrants' relatives, is the exportation of your health coverage as a worker in the EU, for example, to your relatives who live abroad. Under certain circumstances, EU worker who move alone to another EU member state can maintain some health coverage for their relatives who live in another EU member state. It's also the case for selected third countries. For example, Mali and France have a social security agreement by which Malian workers in France can export their health coverage to their nuclear family members who still live in Bamako. And by doing so, these family members can just go to any specific clinic in Bamako and get treatment there that is directly paid by the French social security. Again, that's a system that is very advantageous for migrant families, but it's limited in scope within families. Only nuclear families can enjoy it. And it's also a system that heavily relies on agreements between states. Therefore, it requires a lot of trust and a lot of cooperation between member states, such as in the case of the EU, even though lately trust and cooperation within the EU is something debatable, I guess. Last strategy that we can find in the literature is the what we could call diasporic health policy, if we borrow the term of diasporic policy from one of your colleagues. Diasporic health policy is basically a strategy by which sending societies try to engage actively with their citizens abroad to respond to their preoccupations. And in this case, diasporic health policies are sending state policies that do facilitate the ability of migrants to help their relatives back home. It's kind of a circular system, if you will. What's an example of that? Mexico is a kind of good example. Mexico has implemented a universal health coverage. It's called Seguro Popular. And this system technically allows every Mexican to access basic health care. But you have to register with the system. And in order to make sure that the system gets as wide as a coverage as possible, I mean, the Mexican government has also implemented an external wing to this program by which citizens abroad can register their family members from abroad. So you can actually start the registration process and pay the registration fee from abroad for your relatives who live in Mexico. Okay. Again, this is quite substantial in coverage, but very limited and very dependent on a sending state's willingness to engage with citizens abroad. A few other cases would include, for example, the Philippines or Sri Lanka, who have also very specific policies in this regard. But it's somewhat unique. So what we look in the paper is what we consider to be a fifth strategy, which is a transnational health insurance that we basically define as a risk pooling scheme that is run by an organization in the receiving country and that collects fees, that collect money from the immigrants in order to provide and organize access to care for the relatives in the home country. So it's basically a form of health coverage that is inspired from the community-based health insurances. These are these new forms of insurance that are implemented in many countries in the global south that are trying to organize a pool of people at the local level to manage risk together by pooling resources and organizing and negotiating access to care with the health practitioners at the local level. The specificity of THIs is that the collection of money and the organization of care is done at the transnational level. So that is that the people who contribute to the systems are not the people who benefit from it. It is actually their relatives who live in a different country who access care. It's been implemented in at least two countries, in Mali and the Democratic Republic of the Congo. And it works basically as such. So immigrants pay a fixed monthly insurance premium. This insurance premium covers a set number of relatives in the home country, and these relatives can access only a limited amount or a limited number of medical acts that are listed in a list of pathologies and drugs that are covered. The family members have no freedom to choose the health practitioner. They have to go with the ones that the health insurance has predetermined. And there is no financial transaction between the beneficiary and the health practitioner, meaning that, as a matter of fact, except for receiving care, the relatives are completely excluded from the scheme. They are just, it's the migrant who decide who he or she wants to cover. It's him who pays the fee, and it's the insurance who decides where this person can go. Okay. At the administrative level, so as I just said, so it's really a system that's run from the north, from Europe, where the premiums are collected, where the migrants are doing the marketing work to convince their fellow countrymen to participate. And it's also the migrants and the insurance company who manage all the financial and administrative issues. That is, there's only, in the case that we will study, there is only a wiring of money once a month for exact amount of money that's needed to pay for the practices, and that's it. Everything is managed from Europe. So it is not a form of insurance that involves local authorities or local organizations. So, to understand why THI have emerged as a possible avenue to respond to healthcare needs in sending societies. I think it's important to look at two specific elements. One is obviously the development of co-development policies that have placed migrants at the center of development debates in many European countries, and that's particularly true in the Francophone world, in France and Belgium, where these mutual insurance funds have appeared as a way of instrumentalizing or using immigrants in their development policies in the specific sector of health. But also, these CHIs have been able to position themselves in a global movement in favor of the development of global of universal healthcare in many countries of the global south. And that's where the transnational health insurance actually connects with the community-based health insurance that I was mentioning earlier. So, in short, what best characterizes the THI, I think, is that it's a hybrid system in the sense that it's a public and private partnership. So we have a health insurance that's managing the fund, but we also have public authorities in the north, in Belgium, in France, who get involved in it. They, through their co-development policies, they inject fund in these insurance funds to ensure its financial sustainability. It's hybrid in the sense that it is based in Europe, it's run from Europe, but the benefits are collected abroad and most particularly in sub-Saharan Africa. It's hybrid in the sense that, as I just said, it combines a form that is a community-based health insurance with co-development, but most importantly, it is hybrid because it is a combination of financial and social remittances. What do I mean by that? It is the participation in such scheme is definitely a form of financial transaction. There's a monthly payment of premiums that goes from the north to the benefit of recipients in the DRC or in Mali. But at the same time, participating in such a scheme is also very much a social remittances or the circulation of a certain idea or a certain behavior, in the sense that it's an explicit acceptation by both the migrants and their family members in Africa that their health management has to be mediated through institutions, which is a very different practice than what is usually done, where health is being managed at the interpersonal level, by which relatives call their family members, ask for money and receive the money through a remittance agency, and then purchase access to healthcare. So here, with the THIs, we definitely have a transformation of practice, a transformation of behavior, by which we accept to remove this important interpersonal dynamic from the personal sphere and taking it to at the institutional level. So. We've tried to look in the research how sustainable THIs are as an alternative to the other methods. Well, I do not really have time to go too much into details, but basically we've looked on the specific case of one THI in the Democratic Republic of the Congo called Solidarco. We've done multi-sided exploratory field work both in Brussels and Kinshasa with migrants, with their relatives who benefit from the health insurance, with administrators both in Brussels and Kinshasa, and also with civil servants in the DRC. And what we find with Solidarco, which is a system, to give you just a bit of background, by which migrants pay 30 euro per month, and with that money they can cover up to 7 relatives in Kinshasa. This system, in spite of its huge appeal on paper, has not given the results that the diaspora expected when they launched it. Solidarco was triggered by the diaspora. It's the Congolese community in Brussels who made an explicit call to an insurance company to set up this program. But so far, the fund is far from being sustainable, as there are way too little donors who participate in it. We have 207 people as of today who are taking part in it. They cover up to 7 people, so 1,200 people are covered in Kinshasa, and around 150 medical interventions are done every month in Kinshasa through this scheme. So we're talking about a system that's very limited in scope. What we found in the research is that the limited response of the diaspora and relatives are to be found in different factors. Well, for diaspora, for members of the Congolese diaspora, one of the main issues with the scheme is that is the cost. Even though we could think that 30 euro per month is a relatively limited amount of money, committing to over 300 euros a year for health insurance, when health costs are by nature, you know, unpredictable, it could be less, could be more, but so for many migrants we interview, there's still a preference to take a risk of potentially paying more through informal remittances than joining a scheme that their relatives might not need. Okay, but most importantly, and we'll get back to this later, it is the pressure of family members not to join those schemes that is really key to understand why it's not taking off. It's because the idea of risk pooling translate really with difficulties among transnational families. So this idea that we should, as I said, give up this interpersonal connection in the management of health to an institution is really not accepted. Well, part of the reason is that for some migrant relatives, sometimes health is used as a pretext to receive remittances that are used for other reasons. And maybe sometimes there is a legitimate health need that needs to be covered, but there's also a little leftover money that can be used for something else. But also, and maybe most importantly, we all build trust relations with our doctors, and being forced to go to a specific doctor in Kinshasa that we may not know might act as some sort of a barrier to us wanting to join the scheme. So these are a few hints as to understand why the scheme has not taken off. But I think I'd like to finish my presentation by maybe telling us, discussing a little bit with you what THI, as this hybrid object that I presented, can tell us about the way remittances work and the directions in which they flow and the very nature that they are. Because I'd like to do that by examining two recurring variables that we found in the research when we looked at as to why people join or don't join those schemes. And these two variables were interest and trust. And we really find, well, with regards to interest, that there is a significant divergences in interest between all the actors involved in those schemes. So when we look at financial remittances, we traditionally in research tend to think that there is somewhat of a coherence between the sender and the receiver, in the sense that there is a willingness or an obligation in certain cases to help, and there's a desire to be helped on the other hand. Whereas when we looked at social remittances and the way the literature developed, we tend to look at it in a more circular way, as in like migrants can influence behaviors or ideas in the sending societies, but migrants when they come, when they move, they don't come a virgin of any idea or any ideology or any practice. So we consider that social remittances are usually the result of a confrontation of what we bring as a migrant and what we get from being confronted to the new society in which we establish ourselves. And I think with THIs we are trying to, we can see that this dichotomy is somewhat questionable. And I want to show that through this discussion on diverging interest. When we talk to the different actors involved in transnational health insurances, we actually notice that everyone is there for a different reason. And for immigrants, those who join, they do it mostly because they see it as a potential way of saving money and of responding to kinship obligations. The problem being for many Congolese migrants that the limit of 7 people is not enough. and that they will have to respond to family obligations in terms of health for their cousins or for their remote uncles. So that's one interest. For relatives, as I said, well, health is obviously a concern, so they are probably, in principle, happy with the idea of getting health coverage, but health is one of several concerns when it comes to receiving remittances. Therefore, not having control of the money anymore is perceived, as I said, as really undesirable. For Belgian authorities, joining those supporting those schemes is definitely done to support access to care in the Global South as part of this, of the foreign policy of the state, but also naturally as a way of improve their image, because while you're not delivering health visas, you are supporting a health scheme which can actually help you make up a little bit for the bad reputation that you're getting for not letting sick people in. For the DRC authorities, the interest with those schemes is that it could potentially help build a local health policy. If there was significant interaction between those THIs and local health system in the Congo, maybe a wider form of solidarity could be created at the transnational level. That is, that the risk pooling could actually include migrants, but also locals in Kinshasa who actually joined the scheme. And this is, well, I put one of the quotes here of one company civil servant who was really questioning the legitimacy of the system as potentially hurting the development of local initiatives in the DRC in terms of health. And last actor, the mutual fund in Belgium, which is driven by was a concern of improving its image and using this scheme as a way of getting new customers in Belgium and also potentially of opening new profits. There is another scheme that I don't discuss in the paper, which was more expensive but much more inclusive in terms of coverage, and that one was explicitly developed to make profit, and it went bust after 2 years. So that's for the mutual insurance fund. So I think we have to reconsider, as I said, those dichotomies and especially we have to reconsider this idea that migrants and their relatives are on the same page upon receiving remittances, because what we perceive with the THI is that migrants are actually able to convince their relatives, recipients of those schemes are actually able to convince their migrant relatives to stop using it. So pressure is being exercised by the families in Kinshasa to tell them to stop by using different kind of arguments, such as that the quality of care is not good, that the health centers are located in inconvenient locations, etc., etc. And this has worked. The number of participants has not been increasing; in the contrary, it has decreased. So, in spite of the satisfaction of some of the people who use it in Kinshasa, the family members are actually trying to convince the migrants not to join, and they're doing it successfully, as the scheme is really not taking off. So the second element is trust, and trust is a central element to understand why migrants decide to go for THI. As I said, money can be used for different things when you wire it for Western Union. And therefore, there's sometimes a lack of trust between the migrant and the family members. And by joining those schemes, well, you are kind of solving the problem. If anyone calls you to say that there's a health problem, well, you can say, well, use the insurance, you're covered. But I think we have to look at THI not only as financial schemes, we also have to consider them as potential circulation of norms. When you join the THI as a migrant, you are giving the message that you want to change the way healthcare should be organized within your family. But you're also sending a broader message at the policy level. You are telling home state authorities that it is through these local health insurance schemes that healthcare should be accessed in the sending society. And this non-circulation, this that is trying to be imposed over 38 child, is really strongly determined by the level of trust between the actors here and there. Because some of the migrants' family members who are happy with the schemes, actually all of them, really underline the reliability of the scheme. And to really underscore how reliable it is, they tend to focus on the foreign aspect of the scheme. They said, if this was a Congolese scheme, I would never join. But since this is run from outside, I trust it and I join and it works. This is how it's being introduced. This is one side of the story. Now, if you look at the people who don't join, or if you look at the message of the Congolese civil servants who, in reaction to the scheme, they tell you the exact opposite image. They tell you about, well, why is Belgium getting involved in access to healthcare in Belgium? Haven't they done enough harm already to this country? Why is this a new form of intervention in our country? Why should Belgium try to organize our healthcare, right? So, for this very reason, for the same reason, then trust and distrust are both supporting and opposing the development of transnational health insurances. So, whereas potentially transnational health insurances could trigger the development of local health insurances in Kinshasa, because as people see that it works and that it's a good way of accessing care that is less costly, it could trigger a movement in Kinshasa to start that. At the same time, it doesn't take off because a part of the population, especially the Congolese civil servant, are highly distrustful of an initiative that is run by both the Belgian government and the diaspora, with which, as some of us know here, they have complicated relationships, right? So, I'd like to conclude by just some really general considerations. I think working on transnational health insurance will help us reconsider the border between financial and social remittances. I think we're seeing with these schemes that it's not as clear what is really financial, what is really social, and that by the social effects of sending money, we've already studied before, but what we've not really looked at is how hybrid objects such as health insurance can actually interact differently. And also, I think second general consideration, recipients of remittances have leverage, which we somewhat already knew, for example, with the work of Valentina Mazzucato, who showed how remittances senders sometimes also, in exchange, get services back from their relatives in the forms of administrative help and the like. But here we've also definitely gone in that direction of showing how much agency recipients have in determining what is being remitted and how it is being remitted. And last element, the space and scale at which circulation occurs is not neutral, and that's what I've really tried to underscore with the Belgian-Congolese space. Flows that circulate in a highly controversial space such as the Belgian-Congolese will be affected by those tense relations between the two countries. So thank you for your attention.